Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Chad here with Robert Krulwich today on Radiolab, an hour on the self. How it is that out of a trillion chattering neurons in your brain arises the greatest illusion of all, that you are one thing, one self.
To extend this a little bit, another step, Chad, while we spent the whole time talking about what it is to be a one, or where is our self, there are times when you learn that the self is not got a Berlin Wall around it. We are porous. Our borders are full of leaks. Robert Sapolsky is a biologist. He studies baboons in East Africa. He wrote an essay, which I read, and the essay is the story of his dad. Robert has a dad, like we all do. This dad suffered from a condition that resembles Alzheimer's. So his father was forgetting things, what decade it was, where he was. But he was also beginning to melt into the sun. The dad was beginning to tell stories that were really the son's stories. It was all kinds of things.
Things like, I had moved from New York to the Bay Area at that point, and suddenly his stories of his immigration changed from when we left Europe and came to Ellis Island to when we left Europe and entered the United States through San Francisco Bay, including his describing the first sight of the Golden Gate Bridge, which was built decades after he came to the United States, completely confabulated, but...
And San Diego was involved too?
San Diego. I was in San Diego for a period, and he suddenly had spent long periods of time in San Diego in the Navy in World War II so that he was able to have the same opinion and share the same, just kind of the edges of him spilling over into me.
Did that make you feel a little claustrophobic?
A little claustrophobic, and being a good scientist, of course, what I did instantly was try to label it and come up with diagnostic categories and pathologize it and sort of keep it at a safe distance, and it was all fairly unnerving. And what this particular essay was about that I had written was, amid all of that sort of confident pathologizing, it was only after he died that I suddenly found myself doing the same in return.
Let me read you some of what Robert Sapolsky wrote about this experience. It started manageably enough. I arranged the utensils as he did, hummed a favorite Yiddish tune of his throughout the day. Soon, I had forsaken wearing my blue flannel shirts in order to wear the blue flannel ones of his.
I took a shirt of his, a flannel shirt, and I, back before global warming, would always wear flannel shirts, and for a while, I had to wear his flannel shirt instead. Or he had heart disease and the little bottles of nitroglycerin all over the house. And there was this period where, in the immediate aftermath of his dying, I took a bottle of this nitroglycerin back with me and found I had to keep it with me physically all the time.
Now, you didn't have heart trouble.
I had no heart trouble, and I was a 30-year-old.
And you're walking around with this nitroglycerin like it's your blankie? Like you don't want to give it up?
No, on some level, I needed to have nitroglycerin with me handy in case, like, I had one of his angina attacks.
He writes, I would make love to my wife, work out in the gym, attend a lecture, and always the bottle would be nearby, on a nightstand, in a sweat jacket pocket, amid my papers. There was a day when I briefly misplaced it and everything stopped for an anxious search. It was not that I lost a holy relic of his suffering, an object to show my children someday to teach them about a man they hadn't known. This was urgent. I felt vulnerable.
You know, very hard to articulate, but during that period also, I had a large class I was doing, and on the last day of the lecture, I found I gave this weird lecture where essentially I was talking to them like an octogenarian. You don't believe it now because you're 20, you're going to get tired and... You're going to get tired and it's just going to get harder and harder.
This from the tired old 30-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. I was talking to them as an 80-year-old and talking to
did
them...
Did you wake up to that notion in the middle of it? Did you suddenly think, hey, what am I doing? Or did
no,
it just happen?
No, only
just
after
right
that evening,
you?
Trying to figure out what the hell was that about, instead of telling them about what's going to be on the final, like telling them you should be happy and call your mother and wait a second and call me as long as you're at it. It could hurt you to call now and then.
And when you had finished the lecture to the kids and had been speaking through the voice of your dad, how did you unwind this connection, or did it just fade away?
Interestingly, I actually gave that lecture wearing his shirt. I mean, this was a very challenged period with the bottle of nitroglycerin in my pocket, because I had it in my pocket at all times. And it was that night that I was able to put away the bottle and haven't worn the shirt since. And on some level, I was saying goodbye for him. And particularly appropriately, to, you know, an auditorium awash in 520-year-olds with their world ahead of him, and sort of saying goodbye for him.
A year later, that time has begun to make sense. I feel sure that what I went through need not merit a diagnosis. It's a measure of my training as a scientist that I saw pathology that wasn't there.
And essentially what that whole period was about was learning it is, you know, a perfectly normal, non-pathological state to feel at times of extreme emotional challenge that interconnected with another person, that in some ways the boundaries slip a little bit.
It can only come as an echo, a hint in our armored, individuated world that a bit of confusion as to ego boundaries can be an act of health, of homage and love. It can be a whisper of what it feels like to be swaddled in continuity. It is a lesson amid our ever-expanding array of scientific labels on the risks of over-pathologizing. Most of all, it is a lesson that it wouldn't be so bad. In fact, it would even be a point of pride if, in the end, someone mistakes you for him. My just postscript question is, did you ever say to your dad when he was ill, you didn't come to San Francisco? Did you ever, like, correct him?
Not a chance.
Robert Sapolsky is a biologist at Stanford University in California. He's written several collections of essays, but the one we're quoting here is from The Trouble with Testosterone. That's where you find the story of his dad.
For more information on that or anything else you heard tonight, check our website, radiolab.org. And while you're there, communicate with us. radiolab@wnyc.org is the address. Chad here. Robert and I are signing off now, but we will catch you next time.
This show was produced by Jad Aboumrad and Ellen Horn, with help from Brenda Farrell, Sally Herships, Rob Krieger, Amy O'Leary, David Martin, Michael Shelley, and Robert Krolwich. Special thanks to Kara McCormick, Paul Brooks, and Elena Park. And special thanks to me, too, Nikki Palin. Thanks for listening. Okay, bye-bye.